Karamcast.
Welcome to the Karamcast, episode 11. It is the night of the full moon, and it'll be the biggest visible full moon of the year. We're feeling it. Right, Amy?
Feeling it, yes.
We seem to do these podcasts on full moons.
This one's cool. It's the wolf moon.
Because on its elliptical orbit, it's the closest that it'll get to the Earth in 12 months. Something like 30,000 miles closer than normal. And they say that, according to a Yahoo article, that it looks bigger when it's on the horizon than when it's in the top of the sky, for reasons that scientists can't quite explain yet. And yet if you were to hold up a pencil and measure it, you'd realize that it's the exact same size at both stages, which is weird. But I have noticed that technology has been acting strange because of Mercury retrograde.
Fuzzy, yeah. My internet keeps going in and out. And
I had this incredible dream about technology last night. Well, you know, I was sort of talking about the death of Web 2.0 and where we have to go next. I have a proposal for what next might mean. In my dream, I was in a world where Facebook was actually applied to your whole line of sight. So instead of it being in a browser, it was sort of a virtual reality thing. And I was in New York in my dream, and New York was rendered as a bunch of blocks, just three-dimensional rectangles and boxes. But the thing about this software was that the longer I committed to staying in that world that I was in, the more time the engine would be able to render detail. So there was sort of a payoff for my investment in that particular world in terms of the amount of detail that would get rendered. So if I was just checking in on my, let's say, updates, friend updates, whatever, all I would see was just basic polygons. But if I stayed there longer and subscribed more and more to that particular world, it started to render textures and wires and cables and shading to the degree where the more I became involved in that reality, the more indistinguishable it became from the world outside, the actual real world.
Like building a website. You start with a blank page and then you keep adding.
Absolutely, and it develops its own complexity. So that was actually a really interesting dream. Speaking of websites where I began with very little idea of how it would unfold and developed a life of its own, this last week on the Culture Pin, I put up a post about 10 documentaries about men that will irrevocably change your life.
Yeah, incredible documentaries.
It starts with Crumb.
Awesome.
Which is the documentary about illustrator Robert Crumb and his form of insanity, which is underlined by the insanity of his elder brothers.
Yeah, and his mother.
And yet there's something about them all that is more astute in its observation of society and how things really are than most of the people walking around blindly, according to Robert Crumb. This documentary I chose because this was the one that really first made me aware and conscious of the fact that we tend to pay corporations to wear their advertisements. Every time you go out to a Nike store and you buy a Nike shirt or a pair of Nike shoes, you're actually paying them to walk around with their brand, mm-hmm. which is an unusual reversal of roles. And Crumb recognizes this, and he's very cynical about the modern world. He's the guy who invented, of course, Mr. Natural, and yet on the other side, he's not this benevolent, altruistic figure. He's this guy who draws women having their heads stuffed down into their bodies and having sex with their throat stumps. I mean, he's really hardcore. And yet there's a kind of a liberty to what he does that reminds you that you don't have to stay within the parameters and conventions of society, that it, when you do, that you can get locked into a very dangerous relationship with marketers.
And I found, as twisted and sick he may appear to some people, he actually seemed normal to me at the end of the movie than half the people I meet walking down the street every day.
Yeah, he seems to have a pretty solid relationship with his wife, who understands him, and mm-hmm. he loves his daughter beyond reason. And he's a master illustrator who's had a huge impact
phenomenal
on pop culture. The next film I talked about was called In the Realms of the Unreal, The Mystery of Henry Darger, which is actually a film about a janitor. Well, he's not a janitor. He, by trade, worked as a janitor. He was, at the time that the people in the film are discussing him, a doddering old man who lived alone in a single apartment and never came out. He was very antisocial. And after he died, actually when he was taken to a convalescent home and had a couple of weeks to live, his neighbors went in to help clean out his apartment, and they found a 15,000-page manuscript about this alternate reality where there was a war going on between these strange oppressive forces and these Catholic schoolgirls. One of the most unusual things about it is that he had created these incredible illustrations, mostly by virtue of tracing over vintage calendars and cutouts from newspapers. And the girls in the drawings are depicted as all having penises, which is unusual, but probably has to do with the fact that he actually didn't know better. He sort of had this child mind that he was stuck in and was working out probably the fact that he was sent to boarding school when he was a child and then to a sanitarium, and was working out this pain and this solitude through the course of this magnum opus fantasy novel that nobody knew about until he was basically gone. And this documentary explores his world, and it does so as a proper documentary should, without much judgment over the content. It just sort of looks at it as neutrally as possible. Another interesting film, essentially, about how the little cracks in the mind can produce extraordinary and beautiful, poignant results.
Oh, I have to check that one out.
Rivers and Tides is my next choice, about the work of Andy Goldsworthy. This is the artist who uses things in nature.
Oh, yes.
To create his works of art.
I've seen this one.
He aligns himself with what he believes are the currents and the patterns and the tides and the rhythms of nature, and he starts to unfold designs that reflect and echo those things.
And that are temporary, some of them. Temporary in their initial construct, but then they take on this whole new development.
At first, I didn't understand what he was doing. As I got into the film, I didn't understand exactly the nature of his work. He's building sculptures out of ice that are melting as he's making them, and yet he's on a commission by the government of Nova Scotia. Eventually, you realize what he's doing is he gets to a place and he first gets into sync with it and understands what it's doing, and eventually it manifests itself as a work of art, as an installation that becomes a more permanent fixture. Extraordinary. Again, this is a man who's got a family, quite a happy family, a bunch of kids, and yet he has to spend the majority of his time alone and in solitude because his work truly could not be done in the company of others.
Especially his family seemed so busy, and he seemed to be alert and aware of them, but yet so detached.
Which leads us sort of interestingly into the next film, which is called Surfwise.
Yes.
The amazing true odyssey of the Paskowitz family. Do you want to talk about this one? Because you brought this one to my attention.
This movie's about this guy who went through some troubles growing up and then finds a wife after having failed marriages. And he ends up having 9 children, and they all live in a small Winnebago and travel around. They don't go to school, and all he does night and day is teach them how to surf.
He was also a Stanford-educated physician. In fact, he was the chief of the medical association in Hawaii. And yet, when we come into the story, he seems like this almost oppressive man who refuses to play by what society would dictate he do and to school his kids in his own manner, for better or for worse. And the question I was left with at the end, and I guess the question that the documentary is posing at the end, is can you live off the grid anymore? And to force a child to do so, is that responsible?
You would think that his children would appreciate and love where they came from, and it seemed as though they grew up to become resentful of it, the majority of them.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a story too many of us recognize.
Right.
Parents always try to do their best, but I guess until you walk in those shoes. We have so many interesting films to talk about here. The next one is about, it's called The Wild Parrots of Telegraph Hill, about a homeless, gentle musician who walks the streets of San Francisco and he befriends a flock of wild parakeets, presumably that have found each other, all escaped pets at one point, and have started to breed and develop their own non-indigenous flock. And he befriends this group of parrots and ends up being given a home to stay in while he takes care of them and becomes something of a local treasure.
Local legend.
And a legend.
I cried at the end of this movie. Happy tears.
Yeah, it starts off seeming like such an innocuous subject, and by the end, it's utterly moving.
Yeah.
And his relationship with each of these birds, he names every bird in the flock, some of whom he can track down through a couple of generations. He recognizes which ones must have made it and which one's their child, and they all feed right from his hand and from his hair. And
very smart creatures.
Yeah, extraordinary, with unique personalities of their own. Yeah. And then there's this guy who ends up going to City Hall because the hardcore environmentalists start to tell City Hall that they should exterminate this flock because it being non-indigenous could pose a threat to the local ecosystem, and he's just let them go, let them do their thing, they're totally fine. And it becomes, like most good documentaries, a simple subject at the beginning that has far wider repercussions when examined.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure how this next one plays to that, but this next documentary may be one of the most exciting, terrifying, and awe-inspiring things I've ever witnessed.
I still hyperventilate when I think about watching it.
It's called Man on Wire. And it will likely be nominated for an Oscar in 2009.
Ugh.
It's about a tightrope walker named Philippe Petit, who, before they were even completed, conspired, implemented, and unfolded a plan to draw a tightrope line between the very, very tops of the Twin Towers in New York and then walk across the tightrope.
In 1974.
With no sanction, no permits.
No
totally
net.
Nothing. No net. I won't even tell you how the film ends, but just even looking at the poster for this documentary makes my entire body rattle with vertigo.
I can't even wrap my mind around the concept of something like that even occurring, of someone even having the thought in their head to do that and do it successfully.
The reason that these are documentaries I chose is because once you look at these things, you recognize that life can be so limitless and so boundless, and what we can achieve. None of these people is going out and feeding the poor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But they are still transforming the game in a way mm-hmm. that is irrevocable. Once they have done these things, you can't any longer say that they're impossible to do. And so they change the nature of the cosmos in which we exist.
It makes it harder to get up some days and say, I can't.
Yeah.
You know?
I just can't go to work this morning.
I just can't jog today.
And some of them are functions of people who had a vision and who had a goal. For example, Philippe Petit is somebody who dreamt of walking across those towers before they were even in construction, when they were simply blueprints, and was obsessed with this idea. He said that the hardest part about living out his dream was that the object of his dream didn't even exist in the world yet. And what's even more extraordinary now about this film is that he walked across this line between these towers, and the towers are not even there anymore. So that opportunity is now gone, and that makes it even more poignant, is that sometimes these opportunities just may disappear for good anyway, and you have to strike while the iron is hot.
Yeah, because you never know how long you have to do it.
It's just an incredible analogy for life.
That movie's insane.
Yeah, really, really awe-inspiring. Lest I get stuck in a long string of adjectives, let's move on to the next one. This is called Shark Water. It's about a guy called Rob Stewart, not Rod, but Rob Stewart. I saw this at the Toronto Film Festival a few years ago. Again, this is a guy who started off to make a documentary about his personal love of sharks, and he wanted to make a simple underwater documentary about sharks and their habitat and talk about how cool they are and that they're not all vicious monsters. But eventually, the documentary digresses and unfolds into this expose of the shark finning trade, which has to do with the fact that shark fin is prized in China for strength. It's thought to cure cancer, all sorts of other things. And what happens is that it's created this huge trade, mostly black market. And what they do is they'll pull the sharks up out of the water, cut their fins off, and then drop them live back into the ocean. And these ancient predators, the top of the food chain, end up sinking to the bottom, eyes just in shock, left to die, not able to swim. The importance of this documentary is that he points out that when you wipe out the top of the food chain, you create an effect that can destroy everything below it. Although we've been taught to fear sharks, they're in fact not known to attack humans. If they do, it's typically because they think that they are part of their more regular diet, like seals and whatever. If they see a body floating up there, they might think that it's a seal. But sharks don't by nature go after humans. What they really are there to do is to keep the ocean regulated. Just like when you talk about the death of trees and deforestation, when you're killing the oldest trees and you're pulling them out, what you're in fact doing is you're making room for the new trees to grow and for renewal, just like a forest fire works. Similarly, when we talk about, oh, how can you go deer hunting? Well, I used to be against all of these things. I used to think that hunting was a sort of aggressive evil that was like a leftover from a more barbaric time, until you start to realize that, as Michael Pollan even talks about in The Omnivore's Dilemma, when you hunt, you're in fact thinning out the weakest of the herd, and therefore strengthening the herd. This is why the bison flourished in North America when it was hunted by the Native Americans, because they were essentially thinning out the weak and the sick and so on. So shark water is the same thing in terms of what would happen if the shark population was to collapse. What would happen underneath that? Again, it's an extraordinary documentary. This guy ends up being arrested, deported, threatened, all kinds of things, and he persists. He keeps going back for more and more to expose this trade. So next time you go to a Chinese restaurant and they've got shark fin on the menu, I'm not sure what to tell you, but please don't order it by all means.
They actually do sell that nowadays?
Oh, you'd be surprised at where you can find it. Ugh. And I'm not demonizing the Chinese. I'm just saying, hey, I mean, we've got our own very, very bad cultural habits, but shark fin is a tough one, because the shark population has literally been diminished by the millions as a result of this. Irresponsible and generally illegal.
Well, I'm saying, if you're going to hunt something, use all of its parts. Don't drop it to the bottom of the ocean.
That's the thing, is that when you're not using the entire animal, it becomes so easy to just collect these fins. And mm-hmm. And of course, the greed and the lack of accountability make this even worse, and they accelerate this process to the hundreds of thousands, to the millions of fins. Can you imagine that there was that many animals attached to that part that are now lying dead at the bottom of the ocean? And there's just schools and schools of creatures below them that are generally cleaned up, that are now just sort of flourishing. And that means that just the resources of the ecosystem are being over-harvested, and the system is just will collapse, and it'll have far-reaching, devastating results. So, again, a film that will change your outlook permanently.
I'll put it on my list.
The next one is The Devil and Daniel Johnston. This is actually quite a well-known documentary about a musician who has schizophrenia, suffers from sort of an acute narcissism. He's completely self-obsessed. He's got all sorts of paranoia and manic depression, and yet he's considered to be a modern kind of John Lennon, probably one of the biggest muses for people like Thurston Moore of Sonic Youth and Kurt Cobain, who cited him as a huge influence. This is a documentary that does not try to lift up Daniel Johnston. It simply tries to look at who he is and understand what's going on there. Quite exhaustive in its exploration of this guy. And it just follows my theme, which was unintended, actually, that the cracked psyche can produce some quite extraordinary results, and that being socially inept has very little to do with the ability to create beautiful things that persist in the world. In fact, we were there's been a lot of magazines lately talking about Charles Darwin because it's an anniversary of his work on evolution. And we discovered this week when we were talking that he actually suffered from acute anxiety. He used to
Yes.
suffer from severe panic attacks. And I'm thinking to myself, here's this guy who took a ship out to the Galapagos. There is no idea of evolution quite yet, as he's described it. And he's suffering from acute panic attacks. I mean, he doesn't exactly go and take a Xanax at that point.
Right.
And yet, he went out into the unknown and brought us back something just absolutely indelible. It's like changing our idea from the world being flat to being
Round.
floating around, not the center of the universe, and so on. So we go to our next one, which is Dark Days
Loved, loved.
by director Mark Singer, not the Mark Singer from Beastmaster. In fact, as I point out in the blog, I'm not quite sure whether the documentary Dark Days, which is about homeless people in New York who've created a village in an abandoned underground train tunnel, is the more poignant documentary or the making of this film by Mark Singer, who sacrificed absolutely everything in his life and went down there to shoot this, is the more important one. Either way, this is a film that it just will rock your world. I mean, to think at first, okay, there's a guy crawling through a hidden hole down under the dark, grimy, rodent-infested streets of New York into a dark, abandoned train tunnel
That
where,
looks like it's from 1922.
yeah, and there's actually an entire village of them there with water, with running water and lights and so on.
Electricity
Yeah.
that they get for free. No, I enjoy how it opens. It was a couple lying in bed and the alarm clock goes off. And so you think, it's just a couple. And then he wakes up, turns it off, starts getting ready for work. And he opens his door and they're in the tunnel underneath the city, just living for free.
And some of them are addicted to crack and,
Yeah, some of them want. The one guy says, I don't, they try and come and sell at my door. I haven't been on that in years. And his door is basically just scraps of wood and sheet metal that they find laying around on the streets, and they put it together and have built these incredible houses.
And the most bizarre thing about it, or most interesting, I suppose, is that at the end, and I'm not going to give away exactly how it goes down, but by the end, when they have an option to leave, some of them don't want to
Right.
because this has become their world. And again, that to me was probably the point of interest, was that we can construct these realities for us that are absolutely so comfortable, so familiar, that we don't realize that we're sitting in the muck. And to pull us out of it would be harder than to stay in those situations. And I'm speaking both literally and figuratively. Sometimes you can psychologically be stuck in such a rut, and yet to change from that state of being would be far more painful than it is to stay in that latent depression or inertia or whatever it is. So this movie becomes an analogy for that.
Yeah, definitely.
When seen from the outside, it seems appalling and shocking. But when you zoom in a little closer, there's a kind of a warmth there, an integrity of spirit, and a perseverance that's just like anybody else you could ever imagine being a role model. It's a complex film, highly recommended, shot on black and white, 16mm Aeroflex. Really, really powerful. And of course, the score is by DJ Shadow.
Yeah, it's a great score.
And that last film on my list, because I could only list 10, is The Fog of War, 11 Lessons from the Life of Robert S. McNamara, who was the Secretary of Defense in the Kennedy and Johnson administrations. He's a former president of Ford Motors, chief manager of the Vietnam War. And he's asked a series of questions about why he made certain decisions and why he allowed certain things to happen. And you can go into this thinking, oh man, I can't wait to see what this bastard has to say about the bloodshed and so on and the greed. But really, you start to realize that nothing is black and white, and that there are so many factors and complexities that have to be taken into account when making all of these decisions. And I suppose the reason I chose this film was because we've just come out of 8 years in the Bush administration where we have this war in the Middle East, and everybody's, not everybody, but a lot of people have been polarized between the control of the oil or whether we're basically over there killing terrorists who threaten our way of life, and whether or not war is the answer and that we're all in this mess because of it. But there is something further to consider, which is that you have to be wary of creating these iconic demons and scapegoats, because it can actually cloud your own ability to see the bigger picture and the complexities of these things. That some of these decisions that are being made have legacies that date back hundreds of years.
Yes.
So I'm not talking about subscribing to left or right or red or blue or peace or war or any of that. I'm simply talking about a documentary that demonstrates how deep down the rabbit hole these scenarios that shape the world, that shape economies and histories and countries can be, and that it's all the more difficult to know the way out in the fog of war. That will change your perception of these things and perhaps lead to less dogmatic arguments when you view it. I had a couple of recommendations from viewers and readers that I wanted to also mention. From Eric, I had The Devil Came on Horseback, which is a documentary in 2007 about a soldier who returned from Darfur and saw the atrocities of the genocide there. And he's actually a U.S. Marine, and he came back and he wanted to share his story, and he made the story public. The next one that Eric recommended is a 2005 documentary, I Know I'm Not Alone, Michael Franti, the lead singer of Spearhead and the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy, self-financed this film. He went over to the Middle East on his own and went to entertain the troops and the people there, and he brought back a story about his experience. From One Eye, I had the recommendation to see U.S. versus John Lennon, of course.
Oh, I saw that one.
What do you think of it?
What I remember from that documentary was John's against the war, and so they start doing the protests, and then he gets his green card taken away. They can't do shows, and the buildup happens, and he's all nervous that people are watching him, and she starts to think he's going a little crazy, but Yoko loves him. And then all the next thing you know, he's assassinated. So you could kind of come up with your own conspiracy theories on it. I won't give too much away, but it's definitely a documentary that's worth watching.
If I was making a list of documentaries that weren't specifically here attributed to men, and the reason I'll get into why I did that in a second, but I would also bring up, in echoing the U.S. versus John Lennon, the Dixie Chicks documentary Shut Up and Sing, which is about,
oh yeah,
when they made some comment about being ashamed of Bush being from Texas, and the entire country music industry turned against them and got to the point of record burning and blacklisting and death threats and all sorts
of
stuff.
It's funny how something like that, something negative, when someone says, burn the Dixie Chicks, how fast it spreads. And some people were at that concert and didn't even know why they were hating on the Dixie Chicks.
Mm-hmm. I think that what's interesting in that film, if we can digress there for a second, is that they hold their ground on the position the entire time. They keep this laser focus on the fact that it's not about what she said. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that she should be allowed to have said it.
Right.
Without the witch hunt that ensued.
It was awesome when back in that same city at the end, and Natalie says the same, I guess I should say something, and she says the same exact thing. And the whole crowd cheered. That was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I loved it.
So I hope you enjoyed our breakdown of these docs. I guess I'll get into why I made it about men. For the same reason that we had a list of top 10 intense, powerful songs by women on Music Zeitgeist, I wanted to do a list about men in documentaries, because there is a thing where it's not a convention anymore to look at the virtuous, mind-expanding, soulful, beautiful, fragile, cathartic male. Men are in a strange place in this changing world now, where they're either demonized or they're considered to be, and I'm scared to make the generalization, but this is a list that I also wanted to illustrate that there are as many colors and shapes and types of experiences for men and what they do in the world as there are for anybody. And here you see compassion and you see insight and virtue and complexity and personal struggle. And yet none of these people are the obvious heroes. They're not the Gandhis of the world, and they're not
Superman.
They're not Superman. Although when you are walking on a wire between the Twin Towers, you're not normal.
You're just crazy.
Hopefully that's a rich enough set of issues to merit some response from you guys. I'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on these things. Of course, I'd love to hear about any other documentaries that I may have not mentioned, and whether you agree or disagree. Also, I got some cool comments in response to our last podcast when
we were talking about
serendipities and synchronicities and all of that. I've been asked a few times if I've read books like The Celestine Prophecy and seen What the Bleep Do We Know? And of course, yes, I have. But I wanted to make it clear that, again, be wary of just ingesting those materials which have been mass distributed, not because there is an intrinsic evil in their mass distribution, but because your own singular personal experience is as significant and relevant, and that there's a lot of room to explore those things on your own as well, to navigate those uncharted waters for your own sake, because this is what Charles Darwin did. He went out and he didn't really know what the hell he was talking about. And he did not have an awful lot of people standing around saying, yeah, yeah, I know this evolution thing. Have you read XY book? He just had to kind of deal with it. So when we're exploring the unknown, feel free to explore it and not necessarily jump right to the first New York bestseller list book to find whether or not that holds any gravity.
Go outside the box.
Yeah, you can really walk on that edge as long as you can stand it, and you may bring us back something we never could have suspected. That's the dialogue I want to maintain on this podcast. At some point in the future, we should talk about electrical power lines further and the strange stories that we've heard about people who live near power grids.
Yeah.
But I think we should keep this one to this length, because we could probably go on forever.
Yeah, and I think I'm starting to turn into a werewolf.
All right, thanks for listening, and Amy, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.